You're listening to Irish Sports Talk.
Hello, Notre Dame fans, and welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 419. I'm here with Randall to talk about Notre Dame's 33-10 victory over North Carolina. Randall, how is it going?
Hey, we're talking about a 5-1 Notre Dame team.
And I think we talked about it last week, assuming strongly that Notre Dame would win, which they did. And we were just talking about this is as good as you could, as any fan would have hoped for, heading into the season to be at the halfway point at 5-1, with only loss being a 1-point loss to a top 10 Georgia team.
Top five.
So Notre Dame did move up in the polls. They started out at number 21, and I don't have it in front of me. Is it number 17 now?
16.
So they jumped up a couple of spots, as they should. They deserve to be there. Still, it'll be curious to see where they're ranked when the college football playoff rankings come out. And I do think that they will be somewhere in that 15 to 17, somewhere in there. I don't think they should.
I think they'll play a USC between now and then. If they beat USC, they'll be a lot higher than that. If they beat USC. Yeah. Because their only loss is the current one-point loss to Georgia. They have they soundly beat Michigan State, who beat Michigan, which was the number 17 in the country. So everything's looking a lot better. But the USC game, which is going to be played before that, I think we're still a couple weeks away from the playoff rankings. So if they beat USC, I would say they're going to be top 10.
You're right. I was thinking if it would come out before the USC game.
Yeah.
But yeah, if Notre Dame would beat them, then I think you're right. I think they would be around 10.
The rest of the schedule, I mean, the other teams, well, in this, Georgia's number 4, Miami number 11, USC 13. Ruben's trying to look up
Randall,
something else.
Turn off your phone.
USC number 13, North Carolina State 20, Stanford 23, Navy 25. So the good news is Notre Dame lost by 1 point to number 4 team. The bad news is the schedule is going to get a whole lot tougher. And as of now, I think I'm still sticking with the 9-3 prediction.
Well, we were talking about this before we recorded. And Notre Dame is, I thought Notre Dame coming into the season, I thought they were going to be a solid team. I thought they were going to be a little bit better offensively. I thought they were going to be a little bit better in the passing game, not as good in the running game, and then good on defense, but they're better in defense than even I expected. But I expected a very good Notre Dame team. But what I didn't, and I predicted a 10-2 record at the end of the season. What I didn't expect was for this schedule to be as daunting as it is.
Especially the second half.
I didn't expect Michigan State to be, and Notre Dame already beat them, but I didn't expect Michigan State to be very good. I didn't expect Georgia to be nearly as good as they are. And USC, I expected them to be probably a little bit better than what they have looked at through the first half of the season. And I guess Navy. Navy might be the biggest surprise of the second half of the season. I was expecting a bad Navy team, but they're, again, a very, very good Navy team.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about North Carolina, Notre Dame's victory there, and then we will do, on either Wednesday or Thursday, we'll do our over and under predictions podcast, where we, at the beginning of the year, we looked at different numbers and different lines for this Notre Dame team, and we'll do a little bit of analysis on that, see where we're at and where the Notre Dame team is at halfway through.
And, yeah, if you haven't caught on, next week is bye week, so no Notre Dame football. It's 2 weeks until the next game. So it's gonna be a while. The crazy thing is you realize that the season's halfway over with. We were just talking about the season starting. They've already played 6 games, so it's going very fast.
I've got some muscle flexes for you, and, Randall, you've got some a coffee winner for us. Right.
Yes. for the score prediction, the winner was within 2 points. Chris Martin, his name, he did predict on Instagram. He predicted 31-10. So
within
very
2 points.
Close.
Good job.
But it was close enough to get him some free coffee.
So we'll be sending you a direct message with a coupon code for a free pound of coffee from Main Street Roasters. And if you're jealous of all these winners and you're not very good at guessing the Notre Dame scores, you can get coffee. It just won't be free. But check it out, mainstreetroasters.com. It's the coffee that I drink, and it's the coffee that I love. And it's the official coffee of Irish Sports Talk.
Exactly.
Okay, my one internet muscle flex, and maybe this has turned more into just a funny comment that I saw on Instagram instead of an actual daunting or wannabe intimidating comment. But Notre Dame, the official Notre Dame football Instagram account, sent out a post with Greer Martini, and I'm showing it to you right now, Randall.
Okay.
So Greer Martini is there with a football, and you can see it's texturized and colorized, kind of different than what a normal photo would be. And I never thought of this before until I read this comment, but Right Lane Only commented, "Who let Ben Roethlisberger play college football again?" And I never thought of it before that Greer looked like Ben, but in this photo, he definitely does. Do you see it?
Yes, yes. Now that he said that, I totally see it.
I think it's hilarious. The post is from a few days ago, from 5 days ago. So if you want to see it, you can go and check that out. And then my other muscle flex, again, apologies if this is not your typical muscle flex, but Brandon Wimbush sent out a video, and it was after, let me just go pull up that post real quick. It was when they were running out of halftime.
Well, I will say this. It is harder to find, I guess you could call muscle flex negative comments. A lot of times they are. But with Notre Dame winning, it is harder to find comments like that.
Here it is. It was it was also from 5 days ago, the post. It's a video of Brandon Wimbush and EQ walking out. I'm pretty sure it was after halftime. And you can see that they're kind of joking or talking. And EQ has made some kind of comment, kind of making weird faces with his eyes. And the comment is a scenario. At home, after a 40-point win, my dog's 21st birthday, what is he saying? Okay, so my bad, it was after the game. And this is his second-to-last post, so if you're going to go look at it, you can see exactly what I'm talking about. Anyway, this was before Brandon Wimbush went down with his strange, unknown injury. And so Lehman Thomas commented, "We need to be responsible tonight if we plan on indulging in a few drinks and get a designated driver, because we are key players on this team." So, very funny comment and something that I enjoyed. Hopefully, you guys do too.
One of the pictures, they had also sent out a picture of Ian Book, and obviously, you know, they had his stats with it. But one guy said, "Book looks like Montana on the field." And of course, that got some replies to, for that, because somebody said, "I should be asking you, how is 146 yards, 17 for 31, one touchdown, two interceptions, anything like Joe Montana? Book was horrible." So, anyways, to go back and forth, but definitely check out some of these comments, because no matter how good Notre Dame is doing, there's always
people
that will amuse us.
If you find a great comment, take a screenshot of us and maybe a link to the post so that we know what the original post was. And if we like it, if we think it's good, we'll read it on the podcast. You can send it via email, mail@irishsportstalk.net, or share it on Twitter or Instagram.
I will say this. As soon as Notre Dame would lose another game, if they lose another game, there'll be some gems after that.
All right. Let's talk about the game.
I should mention it now. One picture I did see of Ian Book, he obviously has that mole under his eye, and I always have to think about, maybe if you never watch Robin Hood Men in Tights, one of the best movies of all time, but the king on there has a mole. It's like, I have a mole, and it like keeps moving around during the... Anyways, somebody took that mole, and then they had a couple shots of his face, and each time they zoomed in, and the mole was a picture of a crying Jordan. We all know the crying Jordan face, and that is what the mole was.
Now we know what the mole is.
I was pretty impressed with that. So... Anyways,
now let's talk a little bit about what we got right, what we got wrong as far as this game. I know none of us expected it to be a close game. I said that Notre Dame was going to cover the spread. They did, and I don't remember if you're.
You said they were going to score over 20 points.
Well, I didn't get everything right. I'm just saying this is something I got right.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what my prediction was.
I thought you said it wasn't going to be a game in the first half.
I think I did.
Well, it was 16-7. Momentum going Notre Dame's way
after that
safety.
Closer than what... Yeah, the score looks close, but was there ever any doubt in your mind in the first half that Notre Dame was going to... The score was close, I'll say that.
It was never a question in my mind, but it was it was a one-possession game at halftime. Practically.
No.
Practically.
It was 9 points.
It was practically a one-possession game.
That's two.
If 1 point is not one possession, according to Brian Kelly, then 9 points may as well be one
how
possession.
How would you score 9 points?
Well,
safety and a touchdown,
How is 1 point not a one possession?
Yeah, totally.
Anyway.
I guess the only way you get one possession out of that is a safety and a touchdown.
Yeah.
So...
Anyway, it was...
Do you have the score prediction right there, what we predicted?
Yeah, I had predicted 45-22. You had predicted 38-17.
Close.
So both of us had picked Notre Dame to cover. Okay. Some things that we got wrong. I did think more points would be scored. And maybe this
We weren't sure yet if that was on Wednesday. We weren't sure yet if Wimbush was going to play or not.
We thought he would play.
At that point, it seemed like he would possibly play, but obviously that was not the case. And so I think that kind of changed. I think that would have kind of changed everybody's score prediction a little bit.
Well, no, but overall points scored, yes, but yeah, overall points scored, yes.
They would have scored two more touchdowns.
I didn't think it was going to be close either way.
I said they would have scored two more touchdowns looking at it after the game, they would have scored a couple more touchdowns.
Any other confessions you want to make, things you got wrong, or some things you got right before we go through the position groups?
I don't tend to dwell on things I got wrong, so.
That's the only way you can get better, Randall, is if you look at mistakes from the past.
You have to look at it like a corner, but you know what they always say about defensive backs, you got to...
Keep your head on a swivel. I'll move on.
Well, that would help.
Here's something else. You guys definitely need to follow Michael Birch on Twitter. He has these Birchy bits, and they're historic things from Notre Dame football team. And even last year when Notre Dame was awful, he would send out things that would give a little bit of hope. Not really hope, but just something good in a whole bunch of bad. And so here's an example. Notre Dame has registered 3 straight Power 5 road wins by at least 20 points for the first time since the 73-74 seasons. So that's historic there.
Yeah.
That's very impressive.
I think another thing he had tweeted out was the yardage, rushing yards in 6 games. Notre Dame has 1,848 yards in 6 games. Last year in 12 games, they had 1,960. So, much better. But yeah, definitely, he's a good follow. The only downside is he's an Indians fan and a Cavs fan, so every time the Cavs or the Indians are playing and happen to win a game, he'll be sure to let you know about it. Which, by the way, the Indians still blew a 3-1 lead last year, so I got to point that out.
If you hear that little chirp, that was my phone because Michael just tweeted again, and he has the FBS ranking for rushing yards per carry and rushing touchdowns on the season. And Notre Dame ranks second at 6.9 yards per carry, and they rank third in rushing touchdowns on the season with 23.
So they scored 23. Here's another stat. The rushing defense has only allowed one rushing touchdown, which is tied for first.
Who did they allow the one to?
Was it Georgia?
I thought they hadn't allowed any rushing touchdowns.
Yeah, they allow one.
Okay.
No, I'm not sure who it was. Oh, well, they did in this game.
Okay.
No.
I think it was zero.
Sorry, that was
this game.
No, they didn't in this game. That was the receiver. I'll look it up real quick.
And, okay, let's go through the different position groups. Let's start with the running backs. Notre Dame, again, rushed for over 300 yards total, 341 yards rushing. Huge contribution, again, from Deion McIntosh. Josh Adams did have the most carries, 13 carries, 118 yards, one touchdown, a long run of 73. And clearly, I think Reggie Brooks' comments about finishing off his runs got to him, because he has, since those comments were made in the post-game show, probably after, was it after Boston College? He has been finishing off those long runs and getting into the end zone. He's running strong. He's running through tackles, and he's patient. That long run, you could see he was patient, waiting and watching for opportunities to open up.
Yeah, and but Sonny Michel for Georgia was the only one that scored a touchdown.
Okay. So Deion McIntosh had a big game. He had he was tied with Book for the second most carries on the team with 12 carries, 124 yards, two touchdowns, a long of 35, had a really nifty, shifty move on that touchdown run, left the defender just kind of glued to the grass the way it looked. Very impressive. Now, I know that he's been criticized for his lack of efficiency running the football, but keep in mind, when he's been getting the majority of his carries, it's been at the end of games when the opponents have known Notre Dame's going to run the ball. And Carolina knew that Notre Dame was going to run the ball as well. I think on one of the drives, it was 11 or 10 carries to one pass. So even against North Carolina, it was often clear that Notre Dame was going to be running the football. And he ran hard. He knocked guys over, and he got knocked over a time or two as well. But I just think that number, the efficiency number, I think is a little skewed against him. It's not in his favor because of the situations he's been put into.
Yeah. Well, the biggest thing with him, you know, he was a wide receiver last year, but we all kind of look at him as a small guy. He's 5'10", 193, and he is smaller than the other guys. I mean, he doesn't look like that running back, but he's still breaking tackles and making moves. I mean, he can get it done, and he's technically the fourth string running back.
And I don't think he's close to the level of Josh Adams or Dexter Williams at all. I don't think he can be that kind of a guy. But with what he's been asked to do, he's playing very, very well. He's playing way better than I expected to see from him.
Oh, definitely.
Josh Adams, he did have a lot of carries. Didn't see a whole lot of him. Actually, I don't think we saw anything from him in the second half.
I don't think so. He was out with he was dehydrated, according to Brian Kelly.
Yeah.
This
still continues to worry me about his health. He's been producing, but he's still not healthy.
Here's the thing. We're starting to take for granted this rushing offense because... Do you remember when we used to just wish for a 100-yard rusher in a game?
Yeah.
Like, it never happened. And now we're having multiple backs do it, and it's like, whatever. It's another rushing yard. Josh Adams has 100 yards by halftime. He has, in four of the six games this year, Josh Adams has had over 100 yards rushing in the first half. That's insane. I think he's now seventh all-time on the Notre Dame rushing list. And I just want to see, you see guys like, what's his face from Stanford? I think he has the most rushing yards in the nation. Is it Bryce? Well, I'm not sure. Anyways, but he's playing, you know, he rushed for 300 yards, I think, last game. But he's playing full games. Like, can you imagine what Josh Adams would do if he'd play a full game? I mean, he had, what, the 220 the other day, but he didn't play in the fourth quarter. You know, he would have broke off another run. I mean,
if he'd be healthy and they'd be trying to, he probably could have had multiple 250-yard games.
But it's just, he's playing, I mean, Barkley, Saquon Barkley is getting all the, I think he's had, what, two or three 100-yard rushing games this year. Josh Adams has done it four times in the first half.
Yeah.
It's just, he's not even out there that much.
Well, and it's still a concern, though. He's getting it done. He's getting huge numbers, averaging 9.1. But I'm still worried that he's not going to be able to go in the second half against USC or the second half against North Carolina State. That's what I'm worried about.
No, he will against USC. He's got 2 weeks to recover. A lot of this stuff is just small bumps and bruises.
I know, but get him
he's
get
a running
healthy.
Back.
Get healthy.
He's a running
back. And he's been tough. I mean, he has been playing even though he's been dinged up. And was it last week where he was ready to go on the sideline? You saw him, and then he didn't, but he was ready to go in if called upon.
Yeah, but definitely all the running backs are kind of dinged up a little bit. Tony Jones is still, you know, recovering from his ankle issues. Dexter Williams didn't even play. Like, he didn't even really look ready to go. It didn't sound like he would have even been available the way he looked in warm-ups. But now they got 2 weeks to heal up. And hopefully, you know, the bye week is the halfway point of the season, and it's time for these guys to take care of their bumps and bruises.
And we did see C.J. Holmes for the first time. He had 8 carries for 32 yards, a long of 10. And I don't know what his measurables are, but he's definitely bigger than Deion McIntosh.
6'1", 208.
Okay, so he'd be closer, smaller than Josh Adams, but maybe closer to a Dexter Williams.
Yeah, and he did play. He was also in on special teams.
You mean before today?
No, this was the first time he traveled with the team. I think it was his first playing time, period.
But I thought he looked, for a first-time running back, I thought he looked pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about the offensive line. We're talking about the running game. Offensive line, just incredible. They did have some struggles with the right guard. Hunter Bivin came in for Steve Elmer. Alex Bars. And
Steve Elmer's in D.C. somewhere.
Yeah. I don't know. A big part of this, the success of these backs, is because of those guys. I mean, no question about it. That's a huge part of Notre Dame's success, especially when you're able to plug in Deion McIntosh or plug in, I don't know if you call Dexter Williams. We haven't seen a ton of him, but when he's been able to go out, he's had huge numbers too.
Yeah, and as much as it seemed like they struggled the first couple games of the year, especially against Georgia, I think that actually kind of put a bitter taste in their mouth, and they're just crushing it out there. And today, they were actually listed to the Joe Moore watch list, offensive line, as a unit watch list. So they
for this season.
Okay. Yeah. So they are definitely making headlines. I mean, people are starting to notice, and you do see, you know, you watch Pro Football Focus and all these others are pointing out a lot of things that the Notre Dame linemen are doing, especially Nelson and McGlinchey, but Sam Mustipher is doing good. Well, then Alex Bars got hurt, and he did actually come back in and play the one series. I think it was the 80-yard drive. But then they took him out, and Hunter Bivin came in. You know, he's supposed to be that sixth guy in, but he made a couple. I think he had two penalties in the one drive. And then after that, they moved Kramer to the right guard, and Hainsey was the right tackle. So, I mean, they worked it out, and they kept dominating, so it was, you know, Hunter Bivin hasn't really played that much. Remember how we heard, you know, he didn't get as many reps in camp, the first part of camp, because he knew everything and whatever, but maybe he needed those reps. And he's just finally getting playing time, so I don't expect him, you know, if he would play more, would need to play more, then he got rid of some of those jitters. And I guess with the offensive line, do you think some of the penalties they had, even Mustafer in rewatching, I hadn't noticed it watching the game, but rewatching the game, he snapped the ball too high the one time, and Book just kind of pulled, it was high and to the right, and Book just pulled it down and made it look okay. But do you think it kind of made a difference having a different quarterback back there? I mean, there was more penalties on the offense.
Yeah, I'm sure it did. Not that it's all Book's fault, but it's just different. They probably feel more pressure because they do have first-time starter back there. And so, yeah, I'm sure it adds to it, and I think that is a reason why there were some of those penalties is because of Book being back there, not that it was necessarily all his fault.
Yeah. One more thing with the offensive line. What about that 2-yard quarterback sneak that they did? The offensive line was bad on that, or was just a terrible call?
It was a bad play call. Trying to get 2 yards on a quarterback sneak can happen, but you shouldn't expect it to happen.
It looked horrible.
Yeah, it had no chance of getting it.
I think they were getting a little cocky with the offense. I mean, just thinking that, you know, they were dominating, just thinking that they could actually get the 2 yards. I think they were just put in a bad position.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about Book. We're talking about him a little bit. Passed for 31 times. That's way more than I expected. 17 of 31, 146 yards, 1 touchdown, 2 interceptions. He did have a higher quarterback rating, though, than North Carolina. Surratt had 84 quarterback rating, 19 of 42, 179 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception.
One thing I decided after the game, I'm not totally sure what Kelly and the coaches were thinking throwing it this much, but maybe it's a good thing Wimbush can't throw better. Because why... To me, looking at it, you would expect a first-time starter, redshirt freshman, to come in and just have him hand off the ball to these amazing running backs.
Stud running backs, stud offensive line. I agree.
If
you had told me that they're going to pass for more than 20 times, I would have said you're crazy. But, unless it's a game that demands it, but it wasn't.
And you know, like even against Michigan State, you know, they were ahead, so they let Wimbush pass it a little bit more just to see if they...
Miami.
Against Miami, just to try to work out the, you know, whatever.
Here's what I think. I think it was to try to get the passing game going because this is not all on the quarterback. The wide receivers aren't helping out the quarterbacks. They're still dropping passes.
Yeah, but it was... I don't know. I don't know what all the thinking was, but
I think
I wasn't quite as worried about Wimbush not being able to throw as much. Because if Wimbush was spot on with his passes, how much would they be throwing the ball? And it's just so much better when your team can run the ball at will.
Yeah, no. Randall, we couldn't beat Georgia by the running game. We needed a passing game.
I know.
And so to be great and to win every game, we need a passing game.
Oh, I agree, but yeah.
But I think
Book looked good throwing the ball the first part of the game. It kind of...
Well, not the first drive.
Not the first drive, but I mean, after that, you know, he was making throws that we have not seen from Wimbush.
Well, he looked more confident. He looked like, I mean, he was a gunslinger, and he made mistakes, no question about it. He made mistakes, but I did like, I don't know if I should say this. Part of me likes the reckless abandon and just going with it, flinging it around, and looking as if you have all the confidence in the world. It often pays off, but sometimes it doesn't.
I think the biggest difference is he didn't get pummeled by Georgia defensive linemen for an entire game.
If he would have played, yeah, that would have been interesting to see, to do a comparison. Man, all our phones are going off today.
Man, that was mine this time. This is getting bad.
It would be interesting to do a side-by-side comparison, Book playing North Carolina first-time starter, or Book playing Georgia, and then the next week playing North Carolina. Because I do think he had a lot of that confidence because he hasn't been bullied around like...
Well, and I think that's why Wimbush doesn't have the confidence. He's not letting go of the ball when he needs to. I mean, some of those throws that Book made were in coverage, and you know he had to throw the ball knowing the receiver was going to be there. Wimbush wouldn't let it go. He would have seen that the receiver was not open and would have run.
And I think sometimes
he doesn't trust his receivers.
I think sometimes Book was locked in on the receiver and didn't see maybe the second defender or the safety coming down. And I do think that this was, and I think they should do this with Brandon Wimbush as well. I do think that they set up this passing game as much as possible with easier reads and often maybe just one read.
Well, the one thing that's kind of interesting, Brian Kelly talked about it a little bit, is that they actually had a lot of rollouts for Book because he has to do less. There's less reads to look for. I mean,
he made it easier for him. The whole field.
Yeah. And so maybe they need to do more of that with Wimbush.
I think they should. Especially maybe even throughout a drive, have a couple, maybe have some more complex passing patterns that do require more reading, but have some easy ones in there too, just so that he's not always having to do a whole lot of thinking.
Yeah. But he made some good plays though. I mean, that bad snap, you know, that could have turned out horrible, but he made it look good. Even the pass to the end zone to Cam Smith, you know, for the touchdown, I bet Wimbush would have run that. He wouldn't have waited. Mm-hmm. I mean, Book was rolling out, and, you know, he made that throw. So it's just a different style of player. You know, he made some bad reads. The one where Claypool was out of bounds when he caught it. If we would have thrown that a little bit earlier, you know, it would have been good. But, you know, it's his first time. It's his first start and actual meaningful minutes. And the others have come in a blowout at the end of a game. And so I thought he did very good he did very good.
He's not
better than Wimbush.
I have to admit, I've never been high on Ian Book. I didn't even think he would be a backup quarterback when he was. I feared someone else would beat him out as a backup quarterback when he signed. But he is solid. Like I feel as good about him as I do Deion McIntosh coming in as the fourth back. Like I feel like they're both of them have exceeded my expectation.
So it's USC, 2 minutes left in the game. Notre Dame's down by 4. And Wimbush
goes down and Josh Adams goes down.
Yeah.
And Dexter Williams and Tony Jones Jr.
We could say that in Notre Dame's camp, it would probably be a targeting hit that would take Wimbush out. But
I mean, an uncalled targeting hit.
Something like that. Would you trust him? Do you think he could come in and win the game for you? Are you at that point?
I mean, I think physically he can. I wouldn't expect it. I'd be very, very worried. But I think probably sometimes he could.
Yeah. I'd be very worried. I don't care who the quarterback is.
I'd also be worried if we'd have
Wimbush.
Even like Kizer. Kizer, you know, at least.
Hey, Kizer had 2 red zone turnovers and got benched on Sunday. So that's, yeah. Anyways, right, he did very good. I was impressed, but Wimbush is still the starter, and I don't want to talk about Book beating him out.
Yes, exactly. It's not. I think it's so far from reality, and I'm glad it's far from reality. Receivers and tight ends. Alize Mack had 6 catches on 10 targets. Randall, I didn't track his drops because
I think he had 1.
Okay.
And it could have been a touchdown.
The screen pass?
No, it was close to the end zone.
Well, then there's 2 because he also dropped a screen pass.
Well, then maybe you can't count the one where he's close to the end zone.
We'll look into it more. Hopefully, Irish Don can.
He had it listed
help,
as 1.
Can help us out there.
He had it 1 on the forums.
But they continue to force him the ball. And I think you want to, because I think he gives you something that the other tight ends don't. Claypool has really continued to impress. I mean, even on that play where it was out of bounds, he caught the ball. And if it would have been thrown sooner and in bounds, you know, probably would have had a catch or would have had a catch. So he continues to impress, and just I'm really impressed with where he was at the beginning of the year to where he's at now. Love that about him.
And he's also blocking. He actually tweeted out the video of him basically pile driving the defensive back into the ground in the end zone. And he tweeted out and said the guy swore that he couldn't do that to him.
You mean again or before that?
Before that. And so he did it. But obviously doing good in the blocking game as well.
I think he's been the most impressive wide receiver to date.
Well,
after six games, as for wide receivers, who would you say has been the most impressive? Claypool. EQ has disappeared.
EQ has done impressive stuff, but he made some mistakes in this game. And I include Claypool in this. We talked about how big these guys are. You don't think that. When you see them play, just how everything happens, you think Notre Dame has a bunch of 5'10" receivers out there. Like, especially EQ. And why don't they use their size? You can't tell me that Claypool and EQ aren't going to come down with jump balls. They're 6'4". I mean,
you would think you could have either one run down the sideline, and whichever, unless both safeties do help coverage over the top, then well, you know, throw something underneath. But if
people were complaining about the book interception out of the end zone when it was intercepted, like on the 50-yard line, Chris Fink went deep. He had no chance.
Oh.
Like on a throw like that, maybe the difference is Fink didn't.
Oh, no, not even, yeah.
But if the question is, you know, can they run downfield like that? We haven't really seen it yet with these guys. EQ would. But give them a chance. Like, I don't think they're even set up, you know, to have a chance with that. But a couple times the defender, like with EQ, basically knocked it down in front of him, and he just kind of reached over and grabbed it. I mean, he's not fighting for the ball.
None
of the guys are.
Oh, I would say Claypool is. I think Claypool is playing hard. But I do agree with you with EQ that it doesn't look like he's fighting. Here are the numbers for the year as far as who's leading in receiving yards. EQ is leading with 211 yards. Alize Mack has 154, and then Claypool has 144. I didn't break it down by the last three games, but I'm pretty sure. Well, fine. Let me just.
Well,
that's kind of hard to do on the fly anyway. But I'm pretty sure that Claypool has more receiving yards if you just take the last three games. Final.
He had 36 you talked me into it. I'll look had 9.
Help me out here. Okay, since Boston College, Chase Claypool has had 56, 28, and 36 yards. EQ has had 61, 42, so 100 yards, and then 9. So EQ has had about 110 yards.
Claypool has more.
And Claypool has, yes. It's close, but Claypool does have a little bit more. And I would think with Claypool having kind of emerging as that second solid wide receiver, that would help EQ out, especially when the defense is kind of geared towards taking opportunities away from him. And I think it probably has, but he's just not.
Well, you would have had two more catches. He dropped one. And then he had another one where he didn't fight for it. Or EQ didn't drop it. It hit him right in the chest. He had actually jumped too high. It was kind of low and hit him right in the chest.
Is it the one on the right sideline where the defender, which that throw was the wrong kind of throw. It should have been a lob, not a dart.
You saw it. We talked about during the game. You weren't there. I was talking about the other guys. Watch how the North Carolina receivers fought for the ball. They did it in the first half. One of their receivers was fighting for the ball, and I was like, "You never see a Notre Dame receiver do that. You don't." But I don't know. Maybe with with the run game being so good and the receivers not being targeted as much, maybe, you know, it's when the ball does actually come their way, like, oh, you know, this is actually happening.
Well, they threw it 31 times on Saturday.
True, yeah. And Wimbush threw it quite a bit against Georgia.
Yeah.
So. But, yeah, they can continue getting better. Cam Smith had the fumble in the beginning, which he gets blamed for. Probably some of it was Ian Book, too. Just the, they probably don't do it a whole lot. Handoff between those two. Luckily, they recovered it, or it would have been a lot different. But Durham Smythe also had a catch. It was low. He went down and got it. So they're getting better. The good thing is we can fuss about a 5-1 team.
Steverson was out there. He did.
He did catch a pass,
but there was a penalty, and so it didn't. It didn't come in on the stats. I don't know. I still think like someone could emerge out of that wide receiver group because EQ has been a little bit disappointing.
They've had half the season to do it.
Well, not Stefferson.
Yeah, he did. I think he had all year to do it.
I think he's the only guy that could emerge as one of the top two receivers at this point in the season. And again, we talked about it. We talked about it on Wednesday. That he doesn't have that far. I mean, if he has one big game, he'd be right up there. Basically within spitting distance.
Well, it will be interesting to see what happens at USC. I mean, at some point, it's going to click for Brandon Wimbush. He can make these throws. It's just a matter of trusting his teammates. And
the coaching helping get him in a pattern or in a rhythm.
Yeah. But he won't have played in 3 weeks. That scares me a little bit. It'd be one thing if they were playing Miami of Ohio, but they're playing USC. So that does worry me a little bit. But, you know, if he struggles at all, everybody, like, be calling for Ian Book. Maybe it'll put a little bit of pressure on Wimbush.
All right, let's talk about the defense. Defensive line, it seemed every time that Surratt went back to pass, that Notre Dame's defensive line was just eating him up.
Oh, it was
only recorded 2 sacks, but they were pressuring him, getting after him. Super impressed. And Khalid Kareem, I thought again had a really good game.
I think Jay Hayes had one of the best games of his career. He was always back there making plays, and he was playing with a vengeance.
He helped with, I think he got half a tackle for loss on the safety.
And he also had Tillery got a sack, but Jay Hayes had the pressure on that, and then Tillery cleaned it up. He basically scared the quarterback over to Tillery, who took him out. It was impressive, very impressive. Kareem had that fumble recovery and looked pretty good for a big guy running the ball.
He did.
He kept running with a guy wrapped around him. He gained a couple more yards on that. Daylon Hayes should have had a sack. It was almost like he held the guy at arm's length, just kind of held him, didn't take him out, and the guy threw the ball. It was incomplete, but he should have taken him out. I mean, he had a chance to wrap him up. But it could be one of those things where he's scared to hit the quarterback, you know, that he might get hit late and thought he'd scared him bad enough that he didn't need to take him out. That safety was, I don't know what Carolina was thinking. Like, even the announcers were talking about it. Like, all you got to do here, Notre Dame only has 2 timeouts. All you got to do is just quarterback sneak and
force Notre Dame
you run out the clock. But no, the first one was out of shotgun, I think.
They were both out of shotgun. Yeah.
But I don't know how Jay Hayes and Tillery were through that line basically untouched. I mean, that was amazing to see. And that is actually the first defensive safety since 2002, Justin Tuck against Michigan. I guess Michael Birch said that the special teams have recorded safeties, I think, twice since then. But this was the first defensive safety since 2002. That's 15 years.
Wow.
And it was Justin Tuck. Justin Tuck has gone to the NFL and retired.
Yeah.
And so that was huge.
Maybe the most impressive defensive play was Julian Okoro's tipped pass and then catching the tip for an interception. He just continues to impress. I mean, I can't believe the player that he is as a sophomore.
And he, once again, he said that was a play they practiced, that they did in practice, which it wasn't just preparing for North Carolina, but that's something they do practice. You see guys tip passes, but to actually catch it again, very impressive. I mean, he's going to be a star.
He is.
He's already getting close. So.
Yeah.
Myron Tagovailoa Mosa, I guess he had a chest contusion, according to Brian Kelly. That's what Brian Kelly called it. We don't really know how bad it is. But then we saw more of Kurt Heinisch in there. So he was even out there on third. I noticed he was out there on third down. So this is the biggest improvement on this team by far, is the defensive line.
I agree. All right, linebackers, again, they led the team in tackles, or a couple of them. Tranquil had 7, Coney had 6. And Tranquil had the forced fumble.
You see Coney actually started the game.
Oh, I didn't think about it.
Yeah, he did. I don't know if it's right, but he did start the game. He had some, Coney had some, the one play was pretty bad where he completely misread the handoff and went inside towards the quarterback and the running back was going to the outside. He totally got faked out by that. But then he made some good plays as well. I mean, he was always back there. The one time he completely took out the quarterback as he threw the ball. I mean, wiped him out. So he definitely had the quarterback thinking about knew the quarterback knew where he or who he was. I think one of the big things I noticed with the linebackers, Martini and Tranquil, was their coverage. Like the receivers they were covering caught the ball, I think in both times that I noticed it. But they were instantly, like, they were basically tackling him as he caught it and just took him out. So they were right there.
Martini and Coney?
Martini and Tranquil. Yeah. So they're doing a good job. Morgan, he keeps missing some tackles and a sack. He should have had a sack. He had a clear line to the quarterback and just missed him. But the crazy thing is he turned around. And he was the one that made the tackle then. Ran him down from behind and made the tackle. So that was insanely athletic, but he should have had the sack.
Well, and then he went out. Did you know anything more about why he went out of the game then?
Brian Kelly called it a stinger. So he was fine. It was nothing major. I was worried there. It looked like it was going to be his hand or his shoulder or something. And but no, he's good to go. But he also missed another tackle on the outside, and I think it was Studstill cleaned it up for him. So he has some things he can improve. If he'd improve on a couple things, his stats would look twice as good because they're sacks, they're tackles for loss. I mean, it's things like that. He's so close, but Joe Schmidt doesn't. I mean, Miles Morgan doesn't quite get it. So,
all right, our cornerbacks, Love and Crawford, had 6 and 5 tackles. Love had 2. Breakups. Crawford had 1. Crawford had a tackle for loss, or it was a sack. And both these guys continue to impress. I don't know. What did you think about Watkins' performance on against North Carolina?
I obviously didn't see him as much, or he didn't stick out as much. But
he had Crawford, one tackle, and then had 1 pass breakup.
And that pass breakup was on a third down, forced a fourth down. But all three of these guys had some impressive pass breakups, like in critical times. Like I think Crawford's was in the end zone, so he broke that up. You know, Watkins was on third down. Loves was on a third down as well. So in critical times, they are making it. But Love was, you know, he got burned. Was it on the touchdown? They had dropped the first one. That first pass should have been a touchdown for North Carolina, but just dropped it, and then they did it again, and they got the touchdown. He's the guy that is giving up touchdowns. I wouldn't have expected it from him necessarily the way he was playing earlier in the year, but I don't know. It seems he doesn't get his head around, but at the same time, he's scrambling to keep up with the guy, so that's something he can clean up a little bit. But these guys are playing good defense.
And then for the safeties, Coleman had 3 tackles, 1 pass breakup. Stutzel had 1 tackle.
Coleman should have had an interception.
Yeah.
You know how we've seen the guys take away the ball for an interception?
Like Nick Watkins?
Yeah.
Or not Nick
Crawford.
I mean, Crawford's who I meant.
This, I thought he actually had the interception, and then the receiver came up with the ball. So he had a chance to make an interception. There you would have actually given it to him, but then it was the receiver. The others, you know, like Crawford's, that, oh, the receiver made the catch, and Crawford comes up with the ball. Here he should have had that, but the receiver out-wrestled him. I don't know, Elliott had a good coverage. He had a pass breakup on one of the tight ends, so... he did good on that. You know, Studs, I mentioned he cleaned up that tackle for Niles Morgan. So, you know, they're making some plays, but, yeah, it's just good that this defensive line is playing as good as they are. I think they're making the safeties look better than what they really are.
I don't know. I think the safeties are solid. Maybe not great, but solid.
Oh, I agree they're solid. But if the defensive line wouldn't be getting pressure like they are, they'd be targeted a lot more. A lot of these passes, especially in this game, a lot of the passes, the quarterback was under pressure, which caused him to make a bad throw, which makes it a lot easier for the safeties to break it up. But the entire defensive back unit, I actually tweeted out they're going to come with an interception here. They didn't, but it was like one out, they were so close to getting interception. You know, they had a lot of pass breakups, but they just couldn't quite come away with the interception. So,
and then on special teams, Newsom had a punt that led to Notre Dame's defense getting a safety, and that punt didn't need to be saved. It landed on about a little more than a half yard line.
Yeah, they didn't need a guy back there.
But special teams can lead to points, so
yeah.
That helps really swing momentum in Notre Dame's favor.
An odd thing about North Carolina's punter, he's 29 years old. He's like I don't know if he played rugby or he's Australian, and he's 29 years old, so he's definitely the oldest player out on the field. So,
and then Fink had a lot of return yards in the punt game. He had 4 returns for 44 yards and a long of 23.
I saw a tweet on the first, I think Michael Burchard tweeted it out. We're using him quite a bit in this episode. One of the first ones he returned, he only returned it for like 4 or 5 yards, and that basically like tripled Notre Dame's return yards for the year. But then he had some big ones. And then the one was actually wiped out by a block in the back on one of the guys. I'm not sure who it was, but one of the guys had a block in the back.
But I felt very comfortable with the decisions he was making as far as fair catches or as far as catching and running. It seemed like he did the right thing instead of calling a fair catch with no one around.
Well, he had a little bit of room here.
Yeah, he had early in the year he called a fair catch when he had space.
Yeah.
And then Sanders had 3 returns for 63 yards, a long of 26, so nothing really special there. Yoon, he made his 1 field goal.
It almost didn't look like the angle was from it looked like it wasn't going to go in. And I think all 4 of his kickoffs were touchbacks.
Okay.
So they changed something there. He made sure he had his bowl of Wheaties that morning.
Well, it seemed like they weren't, I don't know. Last year, I thought Brian Kelly said they're trying to drop it close enough, or they want to get deep, but not. They want to make sure that the return man brings it out because they want to try to stop the return man inside. I think they wanted to stop inside the 20.
Okay, well, but maybe
either way, these kicks looked much lower and like they were trying to get it deep.
Well, they were worried about their return guy, so maybe that's why they did it. And then even their punt that they re-kicked.
Kickoff. That was a kickoff.
It was the kickoff that they redid. They just kicked it short to somebody else because they didn't want to give him a chance. So maybe that was part of the strategy. Maybe that's been a strategy not to kick it into the end zone. And then this time when they were actually worried about it, I'm not convinced about it, but it could be.
I'm not convinced about it, but I thought that, I don't remember if it was a press conference or where, but I thought Brian Kelly had commented that. And maybe that might have even been 2 years ago.
Yeah. The one, C.J. Holmes was on special teams. He was the one that was offsides on one of the first kicks. I mean, it was bad. Was that the one they redid? I think that was the kick that they redid.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
But that was his first time playing, so I guess we'll let it slide.
All right. Well, yeah, Notre Dame's 5-1. It was a good win. Defense played well. Offense played good enough, considering backup quarterback and running backs played very well. The question mark still is, and hopefully that is something that can get figured out, is the passing game. And I think a lot of it, I mean, there's a lot of blame to go around as far as coaching, as far as the players fighting for, like you mentioned, with EQ, seeming to be a little not aggressive enough. And then also on the quarterbacks, too, because they haven't been as accurate as they can be, or at least they're not as accurate as we've heard they are in practice.
Yeah. And just quick on the schedule, Notre Dame had off Sunday, and then today they practiced. Then they have off tomorrow, and the coaches are prepping for practice on Wednesday and Thursday. So the players will practice on Monday, Wednesday, Thursday. Yeah, so they have three practices. And also Friday. They're also the players are practicing Friday. Some of the coaches leave to recruit on Tuesday. The rest of them leave on Thursday. But the players are still practicing stuff on Friday.
And Brian Kelly did mention they've off for the weekend. Defensively, they're working on USC, but they're also installing some option football defense.
He said 20 minutes in each practice. So
not a whole lot, but right, I guess. I don't know. Would you say that's a lot? Either way, they're getting started for their prepping for Navy some.
And oh. Wimbush, he's hoping Wimbush takes first team reps on Wednesday. So we'll have to see.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. Or was there anything more, Randall?
No, I don't think so.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode. And we'll be back either Wednesday or Thursday with our mid-season podcast. We'll talk about Notre Dame's the over-and-under predictions we made about Notre Dame's football team. And if you guys have something you want to discuss about this team, some things you think need to be worked on or questions you have, feel free to send those via email, mail@irishsportstalk.net, or send us a message on Twitter or Facebook. So until next time, go Irish.
Go Irish.